You know, 10 months ago, we made a decision to redefine our direction. We knew there would be ups and downs this season. We knew that we would encounter some things that were going to be difficult, and we did. With that said, I think we're in a better place today than we were at this time last year. And I think we have an opportunity to grow as an organization starting today.
Locked On Bulls, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, a show for the most passionate fan base in the NBA.
Levine, he goes right. Oh!
Stop it, Sampson! Did you not get the memo?
Hosts Jordan Malley and Matt Peck dive into the best Bulls news and stories around the NBA.
Here's Enes Kanter, what are you doing? The finisher in New York City.
Your number one source for Chicago Bulls news and stories.
We're going to preach patience. Doesn't mean we're not going to be looking for ways to get better, but a lot of it's going to come internally. We need Zach LaVine to be a better basketball player. Chris Dunn to come back a better player. Lauri Markkanen, Bobby Portis, you go down the line. They have to put in the time, and confident that they will.
So kick back, relax, and get ready for the best hour of your day.
Like I said at the beginning, I feel better today about our direction and our position than I did a year ago.
Locked On Bulls. Bulls starts now. Here are your hosts, Jordan Malley and Matt Peck.
What's up and welcome into Locked On Bulls, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. We're live on Dash Radio, DashRadio.com, and the Dash Radio app. On the Nothing But Net channel, we're live on Dash Radio every Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday, 10 a.m. Eastern, 9 a.m. Central Time. I'm your host, Jordan Malley, writer of Bulls basketball and the NBA at LockedOnBulls.com and college hoops over at SB Nation. Along with me is Matt Peck, writer of Bulls basketball and the NBA at LockedOnBulls.com and host of the 312 show on AM 1590 WCGO in Chicago. Follow us on social media on Twitter at Jordan C. Malley, at Bulls underscore Peck, and at LockedOnBulls. Like us on Facebook, Facebook.com/LockedOnShibles, and subscribe to the show on iTunes, Android, Stitcher, Google Play, Spotify, and anywhere you find podcasts, you will find us. Make sure to follow Locked On Podcast Network on Facebook and Twitter as well. Our text and voicemail lines at 331-979-1369. We're taking some questions today, but we're going to do a full mailbag episode tomorrow, so make sure you get your voicemails in your text messages as well at 331-979-1369. We want to hear from you, so drop us a voicemail. If you're a first-time caller, we'd love to hear from you, as well as everybody that's been dropping us voicemails. So continue to do that, 331-979-1369. Goes without saying, Bobby Portis event is live. Tickets are on sale right now, so you can buy tickets. Head over to eventbrite.com. That's eventbrite.com. Search Locked On Bulls or Bowling with Bobby, and you'll be able to find us. So you can find your tickets there. Make sure you buy them. They're going to go quickly, so we want to see everybody there as soon as possible, so make sure you plan to buy your tickets. You can head over to Facebook or Twitter as well. The links are there too, very easy to get to. So hit us up on Facebook, Twitter, or go to eventbrite.com and search Bowling with Bobby Portis. Matt, how you doing? Welcome back. New episode here. We're going to take some text messages, some voicemails. I think it's been a few days since we've taken any voicemails, any text messages, any questions. So I'm excited to see what we've got on the docket for today. But
I'm
how
doing
you doing?
All right, Jordan. What's going on, Bulls Nation? First question for you. Did you see that video of Bobby bowling last night on Twitter? Because
he threw that strike
like he wasn't even trying.
Did you see the bowling ball in his hand too? It looked like a softball.
Yeah.
So that's a major advantage for him too.
Dude can legit just palm a bowling ball. He responded to our official Twitter announcement that tickets are on sale now for our Bowling with Bobby event at Kings next Saturday, and he said, y'all be ready, you know, putting work in on my game. And it was just a quick little video of him just bowling a strike, and it looked like it was the easiest thing he's ever done. The beautiful spin on the ball.
Yeah.
Nice,
we'll
like,
see.
Nice height on his toss. Like,
we'll
you're,
see.
Dude, you're going down. You're going down so hard. I think somebody commented, like, can I put 10 grand down on Bobby right
we'll
now?
We'll see about that. Nobody has any faith. I'm pretty sure the last time I checked our Twitter poll, it's like 72% of people believe Bobby's going to beat me in a 3-game series. You know, underdogs prove to be right sometimes, so we'll see. I'm coming into this as the heavy underdog, apparently, according to our listeners. So.
Underdogs are underdogs for a reason, and that's because most often they lose.
Well, we'll find out here. So On today's show, though, we want to get to some Bulls stuff. We're going to take your questions. Like we said before, we're going to do a full mailbag episode yesterday, but we want to get to some of the stuff that we didn't get to last week and some of your voicemails that you left us over the weekend. So we appreciate that. Continue to do that because we love hearing from you. So 331-979-1369 is the place to do that. Matt, first up on the docket is a voicemail, and this is an interesting topic we haven't touched on in a while.
Hey, this is Danny V. I just wanted to respond to what a caller said. Yeah, I'm kind of tired of hearing the "we were on this winning streak when Nico was there, Nico this, Nico that." Well, are we saying that Nico was more valuable than the additions we made this year, or he's better than Jabari Parker, or more valuable than Jabari Parker will be to this team? Like, I mean, Nico's not here for a reason. Like, we got a good first-round pick for him, and look at where we are now. Like, I don't want to hear this Nico was the reason we did this. Yeah, he played really well. He also played motivated, and he never played that good since. I just want to get your guys' thought on that because, I mean, it sounds like some people are saying that Nico is more valuable than anything that we've got going on right now, and he's not on the team. So just want to get your thoughts. Love the show. Thank you.
All right, Danny, thanks for the call. Appreciate it. We haven't talked about Nico Mirotić probably since February in any length of time. We spent a heavy...
He did come up briefly in our interview with Fred.
That's true,
week.
And Fred is actually like
because,
one of us.
Because, of course, Fred can't have a single conversation about the Bulls that does not involve trashing Nico Mirotić.
Well, we're kind of in the same camp here. Like, we didn't think Nico Mirotić was all that great, and I was glad to see him go, and I was glad to see that they got a first-round pick for him, and they kept Bobby over Nico. With that being said, we haven't really talked about him to any extended length over the last few months or even in the summer, but this is an interesting comp, so it's kind of a two-part question here. It's one... Do you feel like Jabari Parker can fill the role that Nico Mirotić had last year, especially during December where they were kind of on that win streak? Do you feel like he brings the same value as Mirotić did? And two, this caller doesn't really necessarily believe that Mirotić was the only reason that the Bulls went on a winning streak during that time in December last year. And I tend to agree with him with that. But what are your first thoughts on either of these sides, whether Jabari's going to bring production and whether Nico was part of that entire win streak?
I mean, it's a weird comparison to make with Nico and Jabari. And I think a lot of the Bulls fans that are more optimistic and think that 28.5 over under on their win total this season is insultingly low are saying, well, so what? Are you saying that just because Nico helped in that 7-game win streak that Jabari isn't a good enough player to help get this Bulls team 7 wins with his individual efforts and what he provides the Bulls on the court on a nightly basis? And I think that's just kind of like a comparing apples and oranges situation. And we also just Jabari and how he fits in right now is a giant question mark, because last season Nico, when he came back and was healthy, was one of the pieces who was the most tenured on this Bulls roster and finally was playing in a system without Jimmy Butler and without Dwayne Wade, where he was not kind of just stuck and thrown in a corner and watching his teammates take turns playing ISO ball. So in that sense, Nico did prove to be more useful to this Bulls team last season. And I mean, if there's one comparison that I would, or one element of the comparison that I would highlight, it's that Jabari, much like Nico, will be playing out of his ideal perfect fit position on this Bulls roster. Because we saw Nico flourish at times playing the 4 last season, finally. But whenever the Bulls tried that experiment of playing Nico at the 3, it did not go well. And especially that can be true for the defensive end, which is what we've talked about at length as far as Jabari's concerns, guarding on the perimeter and switching on to smaller players. Nico was not good in that department playing as a 3. And I think the same concern now exists for Jabari Parker. But when it comes to, well, okay, Nico and his involvement with the 7-game win streak, but now Nico's gone and you add Jabari, and is that worth 7 wins or is it not? I think that's just kind of a weird comparison to make. But if there's anything It's that they are going to have a similar experiment of playing out of position at times.
I can understand the caller's idea where everybody seems to just give Nico Miritich all the credit for what happened in December and the early part of January too, but it was mostly December because the Bulls went on a the Bulls were 10-6 in December, and Nico only started in three of those games. I'll remind you because Lauri Markkanen was still playing, but in that those games, like, you've got to look at Bobby Portis and you also have to look at Chris Dunn. Those two guys, I think, had the best months of their career outside of Bobby's scoring in March and the beginning of April. Both of those guys were highly productive in December, and I think that on top of Markkanen had his best month in December and January too. So a lot of these guys were kind of just finding their chemistry for the first time in nearly 2 months after going on 3-20 to start the season. It's unfortunate what happened to Chris Dunn, but I wouldn't give Nico Miritich all the credit in the world.
No.
He was shooting lights out, though. I will say that.
He had a great month, but Chris Dunn was another big piece of that. Because in December, Chris Dunn had the best numbers of his season, and he had a nice, healthy stretch of games. You mentioned the unfortunate injury in January against Golden State. But yeah, I mean, Chris Dunn was definitely a big part of that as well.
Nico Miritich in the month of December played in 13 games, started only three of those, 18.3 points per game, 7.1 rebounds, and nearly two assists, shooting 50% from the field, 47% from three, which is absolutely ridiculous for Nico Miritich. And his true shooting percentage was 63.5%, which was among the league leaders in the month of December. His offense and defensive rating, too, were absolutely bonkers. Like, 118 offensive rating and a defensive rating of 105.
Wow.
You got to give Miritich credit where credit's deserved.
That's respectable for Nico. And he did improve defensively through his tenure with the Bulls. When he came in as a rookie, that dude couldn't guard a traffic cone that had a basketball resting on top of it. And he definitely showed an increase in effort and an increase in ability on the defensive end. Like, 105 isn't fantastic, but it's not terrible. And coupled with that amazing, what did you say, 118 offensive rating in the month of December?
118 offensive rating, 105 defensive rating.
That's what we call a net positive, folks.
But Chris Dunn, more so the reason why I was trying to back this up, is Chris Dunn, I felt like in December, got his confidence. It was taken away by that stupid injury against the Warriors at home, which sucks because I feel like Chris Dunn would have piled on at that point in the back end of the second part of the Bulls season. I think would have been really, really good for Chris Dunn, and people would have had more, I feel like people would have more faith in Chris Dunn should they have been able to see him for the last 3 months of the season. Here's Chris Dunn in the month of December last year. He was 14.9 points per game, 4.6 rebounds, and 8 assists. He was shooting 43.3%, which is actually his best clip of the entire season as far as month-to-month goes. He was playing at a usage rate of 26%, which is pretty high for Chris Dunn. And his offensive defensive rating were at the highest, actually at the best, on and off the court. His plus-minus was a negative 3.5. He didn't have a plus offense and defensive rating, a combined rating, the entire season, but this was the lowest point. So he's playing good on the offensive end, and he was playing really decent on the defensive end, too. So I think Chris Dunn being able to facilitate, like, 8 assists is no joke, and I think for a guy that played little to nothing with the Timberwolves last year, and really your sample size is the first 2 months of the season, having him up around 8 assists and nearly 15 points per game, that's pretty good for Chris Dunn. And also, too, let's not discredit Bobby Portis for him at anything either, because he had a hell of a December and a hell of a February, too. So Nico Miritich left the team. His uptick in points was nearly 5 points per game. But Bobby Portis was shooting at a great clip, too. He was a plus 12.9 in plus-minus, and his offensive rating in December was 117 and 107 on the defensive end. So it nearly mimicked what Nico Miritich was doing. So, yes, Nico Miritich had a huge impact on December, but there was also other guys like Chris Dunn, Bobby Portis, Lauri Markkanen, who were also playing at a high level in December.
Yeah, and just to circle it back to the beginning of this in the voicemail about Jabari and essentially what he can do and what his value is, as far as it's kind of a win shares conversation. How many of those wins in December the overall record and the seven game streak were largely due to Nico. And is that something that Jabari can provide as well? And I think you hit it on the nail, hit the nail on the head right there. Is it wasn't just Nico. That was a month when other young pieces of this Bulls team were playing well. And who knows what, you know, and there will probably be stretches of this season, assuming Jabari stays healthy for an entire season. And that's another question. I think it actually is one we'll get to on this episode. But there will probably be months in which Jabari plays better, shoots better, and has better overall numbers than other months. That's just sort of how, you know, the typical NBA season goes for everyone who isn't an MVP candidate putting up stud ridiculous numbers consistently day by day, month by month.
You know what's weird about the month of December last year, too, is actually they shot the lowest amount of threes and made the lowest amount of threes as a team in that month of December, which is kind of weird if you think about it. Mirotić coming back, knocking down the three at 47%. So that was an interesting stat for me, too. And with the conversation, Jabari Parker and Nico Mirotić, I think the one thing that Jabari Parker is going to be able to mimic what Nico did in December, and I'm hoping that lasts the entire season, is the ability to put the ball in the hole. Like, Nico Mirotić was shooting lights out like crazy, like top of the leaderboard in the month of December. I'm hoping that somehow can get mirrored by Jabari Parker, and that's what he's brought here to do. He was brought here to score, so we'll see if he can do kind of fill that void that Mirotić left after the Bulls traded him, and see if they can kind of get that for an entire season from Parker. And that's ultimately, I think, what we're all hoping for, is the fact that Jabari Parker can come in here and score anywhere between 16 and 20 points per game.
Yeah, that's the goal, and we'll see if it works or not.
Thanks for the call. Appreciate it. That month of December is critical as far as looking at what this young Bulls team can do. And a little bit of credit to Fred Hoiberg in that month, too, having to deal with figuring out how to play Nico Mirotić, how to play Bobby Portis. Can they play on the floor together? There was a constant back and forth whether or not they were going to use both of those guys at the same time, how they were going to split minutes between those guys, how they were going to get Markkanen and keep him involved. And Markkanen, like I said before, December and January, his two best months of the season. So,
and Fred will face a new challenge in that same light this season as far as figuring out how and when to play some of these guys in the front court together. When, you know, when's Jabari at the three? When's he at the four? When is he paired with Markkanen and Wendell at times? If you really want to see the young core with Jabari included, you know, when is Rolo going to get his minutes? When is Bobby Portis going to be on the floor with either Jabari and or Markkanen and or Wendell? It's going to be a big task for Fred figuring out that rotation.
We got to take a short break here on Locked On Bulls, but when we come back, we're taking more text messages and more voicemails. If you want to join the conversation, hit us up 331-979-1369. We want to hear from you. Drop us a voicemail or a text message. We're doing a full mailbag episode tomorrow, so make sure you get your voicemails and your text messages in. You can tweet at us at Locked On Bulls as well. Stay right here with us at Locked On Bulls. Be back in 60 seconds.
Welcome back into Locked On Bulls. Matt Peck and Jordan Malley hanging out with you on a Tuesday, August 28th. We are nearing the end of summertime, Jordan, which means basketball's on the way. Before we jump back into our next segment, wanted to give a quick shout out to our friends at King's Dining and Entertainment, 1500 North Clybourne in Lincoln Park on the north side of Chicago. It is our venue for Bowling with Bobby Portis. It should be your venue for football games all season long. 222-foot bar, longest bar in Chicago. That's right, the longest bar in the city of Chicago. Full-service restaurant, over 50 HD TVs, not to mention their 16 pristine 10-pin bowling lanes, 4 billiard tables, air hockey, and so much more. Really looking forward to our event coming up at King's Dining and Entertainment a week from Saturday. And with that, let us get to our next topic for the day, and this one comes to us in a text from Chris in Iowa. Wanted to address all those fans projecting a pie-in-the-sky win total for the Bulls. Something I haven't heard mentioned in the context of that discussion is the high likelihood that injuries set the Bulls back in their hypothetical playoff push. We've got two players with ACLs, Lowry had some back issues. Dunn had some freak injuries that put him out. He also had surgery on his shoulder in college. Campaign has a foot, Valentine bad knees, and I'm sure I didn't get all of them. Plus, there's the ever-present risk of new injuries. I feel like to exceed the Vegas win projection by more than a few games, everything has to go right. Young guys develop, new pieces fit, defense becomes passable, and everyone stays healthy. That is collectively one big if. Would love to hear you guys discuss this further. Thanks for checking in, Chris. This kind of touches on what we were just talking about with a guy like Jabari, whether or not he can stay healthy for a full year, and Chris Dunn, who we said was also very important to that strong stretch of games in December, and Markkanen as well, who Chris points out did miss some games last year with back issues. So to me, I mean, it's funny, Jordan. I think of the fact that we had Fred on Friday, and he kept talking about, oh, the Bulls are one of the deepest teams in the, you know, in the front court of the Eastern Conference. If, you know, there's no team better prepared to withstand an injury. And I didn't want to laugh in his face because that's rude. But I'm sitting here thinking, like, dude, everyone on this roster has a history of injuries, or at least one significant injury. What is the likelihood that this entire roster stays healthy this upcoming season, Jordan? Because I am not very confident that that's going to happen.
Yeah, you look at the amount of injuries that the Bulls had, and all these guys, and they're not, like, outside of LaVine and outside of Parker, who have fully recovered from their ACL injuries, that's still a worry, though. Think about how young those guys are. Like, you keep it in the back of your mind, as long as they stay healthy and they don't show any signs, I think that's going to be the focal point this season, is to make sure those guys are coming into training camp as conditioned as possible, Parker and LaVine both, making sure that they're at 100% movement. Like, all the videos that I've seen of LaVine, I'm not worried at all about him. I would be a little bit nervous about Parker just because it's the second ACL tear, and I'm hoping with those two guys in mind, yes, keep that in the back of your mind, but I wouldn't put it as a main concern. The other thing is like some of these freak injuries that have been happening, like he had said, Cameron Payne had a broken foot, still coming back from that, hoping he can actually stay healthy this season. The Bulls have had him for 2 years now, and he's been on and off the floor constantly. Chris Dunn has had like a handful of weird injuries, the broken finger at the beginning of the season. He had a toe sprain in March, and he smashed his face into the floor and had a concussion in the middle of February, late January, middle of February. So you're hoping he can just stay on the floor and stay 100% healthy as well. I think it is a little bit of a concern. You talked about the depth too. Well, yeah, there is a little bit of depth, but is it quality depth? I think that's up for debate. And if you're really thinking that Denzel Valentine, if Jabari goes down for any amount of time and Denzel Valentine has to step into the three role, or Justin Holiday or Antonio Blakeney has to step into the two role for Zach LaVine, if he goes down and Cameron Payne ends up being your starting point guard, if Chris Dunn goes down for any amount of time, like, you tell me what kind of depth that is. And if you're going to be winning a lot of games, if those guys miss any stretch of the period, any stretch of time over the next, I don't know, this season or beyond that. So I think it's a little bit of a worry. And you lose any of those guys out of your starting lineup and your core four and Markkanen and Parker, LaVine, or Dunn, it's going to affect this team, especially if they're playing well at the beginning of the season and this team's lighting it up. Like, yeah, they've got scores, but if one or two of these guys go down, have to miss any significant length of time, it's definitely going to hurt this Bulls team. And like you said, I don't know if I'm confident enough to say that they've got enough depth to make up for some of these starters that may or may not go down with injuries this year. And it's something that you have to consider. I know it's not something as a Bulls fan you want to think about, but it happens every year, and it happens to every single team in the NBA.
Well, and when you talk about having enough depth to make up for an injury or two, I think you have to look into the greater context of what this team is coming into the season, what they're projected to be. And it's not like we're talking about a team that's has these great playoff push implications or goals or expectations to say, do we have enough depth so if one of our key guys goes down, somebody can fill in and keep our season alive? Look, and again, maybe I sound more pessimistic than the average fan in that regard, but I think those are the kind of teams that care about depth in that sense. of can we recover from this guy going down so that we are still a competitive team that's trying to make a playoff push. The Bulls are not in that scenario this season. At least I don't believe that they will be. So to me, the silver lining of the hypothetical what if somebody goes down, and this kind of breaks down by position and where the depth on this roster is where I would like to see some of the young guys get minutes. Like, I'm not wishing injury on anybody, but if somebody goes down in that front court that allows Wendell Carter Jr. to get more minutes, I'd be okay with that. If somebody at the three spot where, you know, we're not really sure what kind of minutes we're getting from the combo shooting guard wing position players like you mentioned Denzel, Justin Holiday, and then behind them, the other rookie Chandler Hutchison. If Hutchison is not getting real minutes to begin this season, and then either Holiday or Valentine gets hurt and Hutchison ends up getting more minutes, I'd be fine with that. And again, it's not about can they come in and help the team win games. It's just about getting valuable minutes to those rookies who need to develop to see if they are, in fact, a part of this rebuilding core. That is the context in which I think you need to think about injuries from the Bulls fans' perspective coming into this
season. I would completely agree with you, and you hit it right on the head when you said it kind of goes position by position. Like, the Bulls' front court, they can survive an injury to any one of those guys, and it'll open some minutes up for guys like, if Bobby Portis had to step up and play some minutes at the five, should Robin Lopez or if Wendell Carter would to get hurt, or if Lauri Markkanen had to miss a few games, like the Bulls can survive as far as their front court goes. If we're talking about their back court, specifically their guards. Like, I don't want to see Justin Holiday out there for any extended amount of time if Zach LaVine has to go out for a couple weeks, or if Chris Dunn goes down for an injury. Like I was saying before, I don't want to see Cameron Payne for any extended minutes at all. So I think They're fine in the front court, but the back court's a little bit more worrisome. And hell, we'll see. We'll see what happens with Blakeney and Payne and Archie Diakono and Denzel Valentine as far as who's going to be a part of that mix on the bench and who ultimately will step up and be a part of that second unit. And maybe we'll get a surprise or two from there. But I think you're right about the fact that I'd like to see a lot of these young guys get minutes, and it's not about who would step into that role and help you win games immediately. It's about getting those guys looks and quality minutes in their first season, specifically Chandler Hutchison and Wendell Carter Jr.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think if there's any one individual who Bulls fans would agree almost entirely across the board that we don't want to see suffer any kind of serious injury this season, it's Markkanen, because we have high hopes for his second season and what he can show us as he is hopefully building towards a guy who can be an all-star candidate kind of player.
All right, let's get to our last voicemail of the day. This one comes from the 708.
Hey, what's going on, guys? Jordan, Matt, big fan of the show. Been listening for about a year and a half, and I've never been more into the draft than I have now, so appreciate all the coverage. Just wanted to comment on all the player comps and looking back, and obviously we have a couple weeks left until the season starts, and I can't believe we don't talk more about Taj Gibson. I mean, especially considering I think lost him when he was at his best. He was always extremely energetic for us with those monstrous dunks, and not to mention he developed a mid-range to almost three-point shot, and I just miss him so much. Thought he was one of the better players on our team. When he made the trade, I was thoroughly upset. And, of course, seeing him with the Timberwolves is pretty fun. But, I don't know, just wanted to hear your guys' thoughts on this idea of us working with a couple fours, Portis, you know, getting a lot better recently and obviously an integral part of our, you know, emotional support. And just thinking that, you know, we're a little deep in that range, but just looking back and where you think we're going with this and who you think can step up and really play as hard as he did, make those hustle points happen. Once again, thanks, guys. Thank you, Rock. And I hope you get to this on the show. Thanks.
All right, appreciate the call. Once again, you can hit us up 331-979-1369. So this is interesting. Comparing Taj Gibson into anybody else on this current Bulls team that maybe can step up and play the role that Taj Gibson did. Taj Gibson, I don't think it's nearly enough credit outside of the Chicago Bulls organization. Like, everybody here that has been a Bulls fan their entire life knows what Taj Gibson did for this team, and he sacrificed himself and made a name for himself after everybody was like, well, who the hell is this guy? 4-year player from USC, and turned it into a really good career. Is there anybody on this team that can kind of play that quiet leadership role as well as being able to produce the way he was able to do in that second unit right off the bench? I'm thinking right off the bat, Bobby Portis could maybe be that guy that fills into the role with Taj Gibson. What do you think about anybody on this roster that can maybe fill that void that Taj Gibson was kind of a quiet leader in the locker room and also produced off the bench?
Yeah, I don't know if there's really any immediate comparison just because of the positional parallel. You mentioned Bobby as, you know, six-man power forward coming off the bench. But their situations are kind of polar opposites as far as what they provide. The centerpiece of the Venn diagram that they do both have is that high motor, high energy, high intensity guy on both ends of the floor, and a guy who is all about giving that extra effort. But really, Taj came in as a defensive specialist who didn't have much of an offensive game to speak of. Bobby's the opposite. Bobby came in as a guy who scored a lot of points in college, SEC Player of the Year at Arkansas, and is not afraid to shoot the ball. When he came in as a rookie, not afraid to shoot. Second season, not afraid to shoot. This past season, doubled his points per game with a greater opportunity, and once again proved not afraid to shoot. Whereas defensively, Bobby Portis is still very, very limited and very challenged. So it's sort of like, can they be that same high-energy six-man-off-the-bench role, but as opposed to Taj being a great defensive player who it took a while to develop his skills on the offensive end and his offensive versatility, eventually developed a decent mid-range jump shot, developed some post moves. For Bobby, it's going to be the reverse. He's got a nice offensive arsenal. Can he improve himself on the defensive end to be a well-rounded, useful guy as the sixth guy off your bench on both ends of the floor?
Yeah, I'm just looking at Bobby Portis's numbers last year compared to Taj Gibson's highest points per game season, which came in his fifth season, 2013-2014. Taj Gibson averaged 13 points per game, 6.8 rebounds. Bobby Portis and Taj Gibson's numbers in these two seasons, these two single seasons, are nearly identical. Outside of the three-point shooting where Bobby clearly has him, Taj Gibson didn't take any threes. Bobby Portis shooting 36% from three last season, but 13.2 points per game, 6.8 rebounds, 1.7 assists, compared to Taj Gibson's 13 points, 6.8 rebounds, 1.1 assists, and 1.4 blocks. Has him there. Like you were saying, though.
So, and that was Taj's fifth season.
Correct.
And that was just Bobby's third season.
Exactly. And Taj Gibson was averaging nearly 7 minutes more a game than Bobby Portis was. So that kind of speaks to efficiency level of Bobby Portis as far as offense goes.
Right. Well, so what were Bobby's field goal attempts per game?
Nearly the same as Taj Gibson's at 11.1, and Taj Gibson had 10.9.
Okay. Yeah, Taj 10.9. Okay, so there you go. It's not like Bobby was jacking up a whole lot more shots. He's just, as I said, he's a more efficient offensive player than Taj was earlier in his career.
A few defensive numbers to kind of back that up. Taj Gibson was an offensive rating of 102 and a defensive rating of 100 for a net rating of plus 2, where Bobby Portis was a 108 and a defensive rating of 110 for a negative 2. So there's a little bit of a split difference there, but obviously Bobby giving you more offense and not as much defense, and you flip that on its head and Gibson giving you a little bit more defense and not as much offense. But I think there's something to say as far as comparing what Taj Gibson was at his peak offensive player in his fifth season with the Bulls, comparing it to just Bobby Portis's third year. So that's why, like, I feel like people are counting Bobby Portis out this year as far as like being the odd man out on this team. And I completely disagree with that. I think people are undervaluing his offensive potential, especially with the second unit.
It's not about his offensive potential. It's about his limited opportunity. 22.5 minutes per game last season, with the additions of Jabari and Wendell and the existence of Markin and the existence of Robin Lopez, not even counting Ashik and Felicio, who probably won't see the floor at all this season, I'm just saying it's hard to see those minutes go up. And with the addition of Jabari, with the addition of Wendell, and the, you know, a healthy Zach LaVine and a healthy Chris Dunn and a healthy Lowry Markin, it's hard to see his usage go up or his minutes go up, which is why, look, I hope Bobby has a great season. I don't know if the whole sixth man of the year goal that he set for himself is all that realistic, given the limited opportunity to be a focal point of this team offensively, and defensively, he's still a weak link.
Yeah, it's crazy. Do you think Bobby Portis is going to have a usage percentage of 26% like he did last season?
No. No
way. Where do you see his usage being?
With a full season of LaVine and now Jabari, it might dip back below 20.
Even on that second unit, though?
I would not be surprised at all. I would be shocked if it's 26.
Yeah, I would be too, but that might go in terms of what lineups he's playing with and also how many minutes he's getting. If he's the clear-cut power forward in that second unit off the bench, you've got Cameron Payne, Justin Holiday, Denzel Valentine, Bobby Portis, Wendell Carter Jr. If that's what you're going to project as your bench unit, I would say Portis and Wendell Carter Jr. are probably your two offensive options, and also Denzel Valentine too. So I don't know. I would say I don't think it's going to dip below 20. I would say if he averages 22 to 25 points or 25 minutes per night, we'll probably see a little bit of a dip, but I would say probably still between 22 and 24%. Because look, you still got to have somebody making buckets at the end of the day on that bench unit. I understand your point if he does get into lineups where he's having to play alongside Parker and LaVine, or LaVine and Markkanen, or Markkanen and Parker at the same time. It might get cut in a little bit, but I don't know. A usage percentage of 26% is pretty high for a guy off the bench, but I would say probably dip below 20. It'd probably be between 22 and 24, and that's if they actually believe in Bobby Portis's offensive potential with that second unit. So it'll be interesting, but back to the main point, Taj Gibson and Bobby Portis, it's a good comp. Like, those two guys are pretty similar. I know there's a little bit of a difference as far as the defensive potential there, but I'll just throw this at you. Taj Gibson's fifth year, his offensive box plus minus was a negative 2.6, and his defensive box plus minus was 1.4 for a box plus minus of negative 1.1. Bobby Portis was an offensive box plus minus of 1.0. and a defensive box plus minus of negative 0.6 for a positive box plus minus of 0.3. So overall, Bobby was a way better offensive player than Taj was, but he wasn't nearly as bad as a defender as maybe some people think, and not nearly as bad as a defender as Taj Gibson was an offensive player in his fifth year. So if we're looking at offensive value here, I think Bobby's definitely got Taj Gibson beat out. I'd like to see him be able to improve on the defensive end. And we might be even talking about a more productive player in Bobby Portis at 23 years old than Taj Gibson was ever here in Chicago. So that's a good comp.
That's true. And you know, Taj came in as an old rookie.
Right, what was he, 24 when he was a rookie?
Because of course he did. He was 24 years old as a rookie, which is an even more exaggerated representation or example of how this front office likes to draft and how they really value those mature guys as opposed to those young one-and-done kids. Of course, we've now seen a slight turn away from the norm there with our two most recent picks, Lowry being a one-and-done guy and, you know, coming in as a 20-year-old rookie, and now Wendell, who, like, was barely 19 when the Bulls drafted him. So, I think Taj and Bobby are different players. They were different players coming into the pros, and it's just about how they can accent and supplement the strengths they had coming into the league by improving on their weaknesses. And for those two individuals, those are in different categories of strengths versus weaknesses. But back to your original statement of how we opened this discussion, I would agree. I think, you know, Taj is one of the most underrated guys that's ever come through this Bulls organization, even though he was always a fan favorite guy. I think, as much as Bulls fans fell in love with Jimmy Butler because he was the savior we all needed in the dark years of Derrick Rose's, you know, decline, you and I went to that game, that Bulls Wolves game, the return of Taj and Jimmy and Tibbs. Shout out to our listener Robert, who won that contest. Robert and his dad came and joined us at the Madhouse that night. The love that Taj Gibson gets from Bulls fans. So, and maybe in that regard, he's not underrated. Because the fan base that pays attention and knows exactly what Taj did for that team, especially that team that we all thought were championship contenders in that window, great hustle guy, great defensive player, does all the dirty work, and a great locker room guy. Never heard a single tiny little complaint from him, especially as he was developing and turning into a better and better player and was still serving as that bench player. When a lot of people believe that, you know, that guy's good enough to start. Started all 82 games for the Timberwolves last season and came in when the Bulls were shorthanded his rookie year. He started 70 games. And then the following seasons, 19 starts, 0 starts, 5 starts, 8 starts, 17 starts. Finally, because of, you know, injury issues in 15-16, that jumped up to 55. But, you know, because of the additions of guys like Boozer and guys like Pau Gasol, Taj never really got that opportunity to be a starter in his, in, you know, beyond the rookie year that he played with the Bulls. And dude never said a single thing about it. Team first guy all the way. Okay. So clearly what's going on here is that you're sucking up to Bobby so that he takes it easy on you on the lanes. Is that what's happening?
No, because I know we're going to get a freak out from all Bulls fans comparing Taj Gibson to Bobby Portis.
I get your optimism on Bobby, and I hope that he has another strong season like the one he had. I'm just saying right now, even though his numbers offensively in year three are right there on par, if not better, than Taj's in year five, that's not what Taj was really known for here.
I guess my question is, and this maybe will play out this season, like, what does Bobby want long term? Is starting more important than maybe being a viable 22 to 25 minute guy off the bench and kind of making yourself and carving yourself out a career like Gibson did in that fashion? Or does he still see himself as a starter?
It's a good question, because especially if the Bulls really want to build around and are excited about the future front court of Markkanen and Wendell, then there's no room for Bobby to be a starter on this team, plain and simple. Because, you know, he said, set the goal for himself, sixth man of the year. That would, you know, that would show you that he is aware of his role this season. He knows he's going to be a bench guy unless somebody gets hurt. It's just, as you said, a matter of what he sees himself being in this league moving forward and how that can either keep him in Chicago or send him on his way.
If he wins Sixth Man of the Year this year, does he stay with the Bulls?
That's a good question, because maybe the Bulls see his value by winning a prestigious award like that, and also other teams across the league see his value by winning an award like that. I mean, it's a toss-up. Obviously, if the Bulls really value Bobby and he wins that award and they take that as the sign of, okay, we want to keep him, it will be more expensive for them to do so. So it's just about how much they value him. I'll say this, though. I think it's a moot point, because as much as I'm rooting for him to do it, I think you need to be on a better team to win that award. And a better team than the Bulls will be this season.
You don't think the Bulls can be kind of a quasi what the Clippers were last year?
Eh.
But Lou Williams did a hell of a lot coming off the bench, scoring for them.
Yeah, dude was like the team's leading scorer coming off the bench, dropping 20, 30 points a night.
So I think that's going to be something definitely to monitor with Portis, especially first 2 months of the season. If Portis is lighting it up, like, the Bulls are going to have to press themselves as far as making a decision here. Because you might, if you don't re-sign him or you don't trade him by February, and you're going to let him go into free agency next season, like, you might find yourself being outbid by other teams and he's going to walk for nothing. So that might be a case of where you might find yourself in a bad situation. So I think it's something good to monitor over the first 2 months of the season or so to see kind of where he's at.
Yeah, whatever happens, Gar will find a way to spin it.
Well, that's going to...
We feel like we all won. Jordan, just before we get out of here, just wanted to give a quick reminder to all of our listeners who play fantasy football. I got another draft coming up tonight. It's crunch time for fantasy football, and Locked On is delivering. Our Locked On Podcast Network has a brand new fantasy football show, Locked On Fantasy Football 24/7. Fantasy Football 24/7 will give you the latest trends, hot roster moves, and where to get the edge. Plus, Ethan Turner, the injury expert, gives you a little extra advantage on the on those injuries. Locked On Fantasy Football 24/7 is here to help you win your league. I got another one tonight, Jordan. I'm ready for it.
Well, good luck to you and to anybody else out there drafting. That's going to about do it here on Locked On Bulls. Remember, selling tickets to Bobby Portis, Bowling with Bobby Portis. Tickets are on sale right now. Head over to eventbrite.com and search Locked On Bulls or Bowling with Bobby. If you don't want to do either of those, head to Facebook or Twitter at Locked On Bulls or facebook.com/LockedOnShyBulls. You can buy tickets, an easy one-click solution. They're at Facebook, too. You can buy the tickets straight in Facebook's app. We have an event page open, so search Bowling with Bobby, and you'll be able to find it there. Buy your tickets now. They're going to go quick, so we want to see everybody there. Tickets on sale right now, eventbrite.com, Facebook, or Twitter. We're live on Dash Radio, dashradio.com, and the Dash Radio app. On the Nothing But Net channel, we're live on Dash Radio every Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday, 10 a.m. Eastern, 9 a.m. Central Time. Follow us on social media at Jordan C. Malley, at Bulls_Peck, and at Locked On Bulls. Like us on Facebook, facebook.com/LockedOnShyBulls, and subscribe to the show on iTunes, Android, Stitcher, Google Play, Spotify, and anywhere you find podcasts, you will find us. Our text and voicemail line, 331-979-1369. Join the conversation. We want to hear from you. Voicemails and text messages, we're doing mailbag tomorrow, extended episodes, so drop us a voicemail, drop us a text message, 331-979-1369. For Matt Peck, I'm Jordan Malley. Bulls Nation, have a wonderful day. Be back tomorrow with a fresh episode. For Jordan and Matt, we are out. Deuces.
Locked On Bulls, a show for the most passionate fan base in the NBA. Hosts Jordan Malley and Matt Peck dive into the best Bulls news and stories around the NBA. Locked On Bulls is live on Dash Radio every Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday, starting at 10 a.m. Eastern, 9 a.m. Central. For more content and to stay up to date, head over to LockedOnBulls.com